Hey, I'm Eric Tornberg, and welcome to another episode of Maker Stories, where we explore what makes the makers, what drives them, what they're scared of, how they make sense of the world, and everything in between. This week's episode is with Jesse Williams. Jesse, who formerly taught school for 9 years, now is an actor in the hit show Grey's Anatomy. This episode, we talk about the launch of his app, Broji. We talk about emojis and GIFs as extension and evolution of language. We talk about the upsides and downsides of him being famous, the role social justice plays in his life, and much, much more. It was cool to talk to a fellow famous person, so I really enjoyed this conversation. Yeah, you know, it's not easy. It's not easy. All right, here's Jesse.
Aaron had an idea for, and this is a while ago now, you know, with emojis. Everybody was kind of using emojis, but they were falling flat. And Aaron, you know, one day was just like, how are there no brown emojis? Brown people of all different shades have such an impact on technology and culture and communication. There should be brown emojis, of course. So we should build that. So we started thinking about that. And, you know, us with Glenn started thinking about building that and what that would make. And then we realized, why try to play kind of catch up to what's happening now? What really has more tone and texture and life and nuance are GIFs. And this was, you know, this is something that we had a lot of fun with. We saw it was really popular on Tumblr and Twitter and other forms of communication online. And they just had something that emojis didn't have, right? They're not stagnant. Once you've seen the emoji, you've seen all of them. And this is something that is ever-changing. And GIFs are, you know, because they can be current, they can be from a TV show last night or an event last night, or they could be from, you know, for a Broji, we pull things from the 20s, you know, at old movies or whatever. So
they're a bit more alive.
They're alive, and they add that kind of texture and sarcasm to, you know, if you ask me how I'm doing, and I, you know, on text, we always say when you enter sending emails, you know, what did you mean? Was that, were you being shady? Was that serious? Was there a bit of a wink and a nod there? You know, what really was the tone? And it's always missed in text-based language. So it's a bit of, you know, we also thought that GIFs can kind of be part of live as part of a continuum of language, right? Because it's not just what's current and trendy now. We can pull images from all different sets, all different cultures and times and energy levels.
And ultimately you don't have to stack them the way you would stack emojis to get your whole sentiment across. You can deliver your message in one clean little few seconds.
One GIF has the power of 15 emojis. Yeah, exactly.
So tell me, how did you three sync up?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm an artist, and Jesse and Aaron are great philanthropists and are around the art world, and we all sort of circulate in the same group, you know. And I think that we have met each other and have, you know, we're fans of the same work and have you know, been around a number of occasions, and we started a dialogue about our respective practices and Ebroji, and this dialogue that I think Jesse began with, you know, really kicked off, you know, a real fruitful discussion that in the beginning wasn't really about making a specific product more than it was, you know, political, and the idea of access to technology and who gets to make technology, who gets to have a voice in technology. And so quickly, you know, working together with friends is a really easy thing to do. And so, you know, what became some sketches and some conversations over coffee quickly became, let's just go and do something and make something. And so very natural.
Yeah, you know, we hear a lot of entertainers or people in entertainment and different industries wanting to get into technology, but typically it's from a, you know, an opportunity to make money or opportunity to sort of, you know, be of what's cool. You hear it less in terms of a form of activism, which is really refreshing on your account. Like, how do you explain more of that philosophy?
It's been received really well, though I don't care that much how it's received. I think that you're right, though. I mean, Broji lives as something that is part of kind of a common thread in my particular interest and practice, and I know I can speak for both Glenn and Aaron as well, is this thinking about equity and opportunity and access for people to participate in and reap the benefits from and be able to have a hand on the steering wheel of the culture that they contribute to, whether that's global culture, American culture, you know, Black culture, social media, everything that's constantly changing. So you can, there really are a million ways for there you us to find intersections of being socially active, being awake or woke, as we call it, and being able to still have a voice in entertainment, and be able to offer commentary, be able to be thoughtful, and also to be able to take ownership and be comfortable sitting in your own skin of the way you and your particular group, social, 5 people, 20 people, 2 million people, choose to communicate. The way you say what up or whatever might be articulated in a different way than somebody else does. It doesn't make it less valuable. It doesn't make it inferior. It doesn't make it strictly a trend or a gimmick. It's the way you choose to communicate, and that has value, and we shouldn't have to kind of wait for validation from larger bodies before, you know, we shouldn't have to wait for, you know, a lot of words that have become slang or kind of a joke, and we kind of make fun of them, and then they become part of the lexicon, and we wait for that. So once that stamp happens, you know, it becomes approved. So we kind of wanted to create a space where people felt comfortable kind of living and communicating the way they were, and being able to use devices that reflect them in this moment.
Are there products or other companies that you guys admire the way they're moving the cause forward consciously? Or, you know, other influences that you guys took from?
Well, we definitely, I find that we're constantly influenced by, you know, as much as, you know, we're trying, as Abroji is maybe wearing a bit of a leadership hat in some way. In many ways, we're just really kind of aggregating all the incredible creatives that are communicating online. So, I take inspiration daily from Tumblr, from Twitter, from just kind of a lot of these third-party methods that people use to communicate with each other and get creative with the creation of GIFs and memes, and people kind of going on the attack on Twitter and just having fun and clowning each other. So I think the breadth, the incredible array and diversity with which people can find ways to communicate with 4 characters, 140 characters, 1 image is inspiring. It's kind of, you know, you're making this incredible concoction out of, you know, making a gourmet meal out of, you know, pig leftovers. It's inspiring. In terms of products, I love the way that people, I think I'm more the way of language and the people that are writing online, bloggers, people that are creating analysis, like real thoughtful analysis with rooted in historical context around social issues and activism and comedy and the Oscars or whatever, you know, whatever is topical and moving the needle. And people are finding ways to articulate their voice and have it and find an audience for it. We were told before there's no way you can access an audience without the 3 major networks. And it became 10, then it became 500. And now it's us talking right now with however many people listening. You know, cutting out a lot of middlemen. I really enjoy that.
All of that to say, I don't think that there is a specific body that we turn to. And I think we're trying, you know, to be a group of the first who are setting the platform and hoping that this is the first thing of many things that comes to help expand the conversation and give more people a more clear and genuine voice from the source versus, you know, it having passed through however many different filters and then regurgitated back out in some, you know, inauthentic way. So we are hoping to fill a gap where we see a very clear gap, and we're excited to be in the space.
Yeah,
I think that as opposed to products, just to add one last little thing, I think it's really about how we're inspired by how people are using a diverse set of products. Because it's not just about like the actual products that are being developed. Like Jesse said, we take inspiration from Tumblr, from Twitter, from Instagram. It's really about finding out how a technology platform like that really unlocks creativity from people. And when we crack up when we see new images, new GIFs, and new applications and people hacking, you know, a current platform for some new way and, you know, using some Twitter thing upside down or something. It's the coolest thing to watch how communities are using technology in novel ways. And that's sort of, you know, where we draw a lot of the inspiration. So
tell us about the process of making that. You know, how do you guys work together? And
well, it started really with, you know, as Glenn mentioned, us sitting around this table and spitballing ideas and sketching You know, Glenn's an artist. He, you know, he's the certainly the most visually talented, you know, artistically talented among us. But kind of putting ideas to paper and just spitballing things, throwing things away. This wasn't our first idea. You know, we had three ideas before this, and but we learned a lot about how to communicate with each other, what people's kind of skill sets were, and just getting to know each other better, developing a shorthand. And Glenn, his background is in creating media, and he's got an incredible relationship and history with tech and startups. So that really helped us get a sense of the landscape. I think, you know, for Aaron and I, this is a whole new planet for us. You know, the vocabulary of the tech space, of apps in particular, but just the world of tech and the constantly evolving terminology and product lines. So we're kind of just learning on our feet and trying and failing a lot, really.
And talk about the process for you being being an actor and spending, you know, a lot of your time in the entertainment industry. What's something, you know, similar and or different about, you know, creating a show versus creating a product?
That's an interesting one. I think that this, I feel way more, so if there's, I feel way more like my feet are on the ground and connected and among the people that we're aiming to serve with a product like this, because it really is designed in real time around culture and what's happening right now and giving people an extension on their tool. It's kind of like an energizer for language for them exactly where they are without asking them to change or meet me at a certain time or be somewhere or suspend disbelief or anything like that. So I just feel a little bit more like reality versus fantasy, and both have value, but I do just feel a little more connected to the user, the audience, the person who I depend on and who depends on me, and we have this reciprocal relationship. So the connectivity feels much realer, and it really feels 100% about the product and experience versus celebrity and trends and gossip and whether you find her or him attractive and other things that kind of all of the connective tissue that live around kind of Hollywood exchange of art. They both complement each other. Both of them certainly have value, but yeah, this one, I really love the it's working in a different way. I really love the process of being in the shop with these guys and tinkering and making mistakes and being told that that's a stupid idea. And going back into the shop and trying to make it better. That doesn't feel the same being on set and delivering doing a scene and being told it's a stupid performance. It strikes you in a different way.
Right.
But that's
talking about Aaron, not me.
All right. And I'm curious, just on that last part, you mentioned, like, you know, the Hollywood, you know, the gossip, the drama, who's attractive and who's not. But how do you feel about someone who, like, as someone who, you know, both is, you know, intelligent and self-aware enough to be a critic of that, but also sort of, I don't know if this is the right way of saying it, like, benefit from it at the same time a little bit. How do you think about, like, do you think, this is silly, but I can benefit from it because, and then I can create all sorts of other things that it allows me to do? Like, how do you?
Yeah, I think that, you know, that is both the gift and the curse. That is I view it. And a lot of that had to do with, kind of on a personal level with Aaron and I, as kind of being teammates and partners for so long, is figuring out how can we use this for good? How can we use this to impact something positively and use what's been given to me to project outward and be of service to other folks? And so that's whether that's her convincing me to get on Twitter, but, you know, only if it's I'm going to use it to expand beyond how I'm currently represented in media. So that goes for social justice, right? If I'm constantly this viewed as this social justice warrior or something online, I'm choosing to, you know, not just rest on my laurels from my Twitter page or Instagram or something and post selfies all day every day and use that platform to try to expose other people to the realities that they might not experience themselves. So just using it. Being aware of it and using it.
And as a result of it, you're able to deliver messages in ways that people who aren't in that position are able to do.
Yeah, and it's received by people who otherwise wouldn't have. Here's an interesting example.
It's a lot easier for your face to deliver a lot of you know, not so easy material to swallow than from other sources.
So that bias, that colorism, that privilege, I can use that to forward and further humanize a population that otherwise wouldn't be receiving that. An example, I've written a couple articles on CNN or some other sites about issues. And I decided not too long ago that maybe I can be of more, a better service and kind of hack the system in a certain way by, instead of putting it in a place, right, on CNN.com or HuffPo or something where you go to receive hard truths, maybe just do that article on Twitter. Because you've already followed me, a million people or whatever already follow me on Twitter anyway, and they're going to see my feed anyway. So why not just hit them in the face with this message directly so you have no choice? You don't have to go find it. It found you. So that's something I experimented with in terms of addressing some topical issues, particularly around Black Lives Matter and police violence, by just going directly, right? Again, cutting out the middleman or just kind of cornering you instead of asking you to come open this door. And who knows if that's a success or not, but experimenting, right? Just kind of experimenting with the ways in which we deliver information. And again, it's going more looking for direct routes instead of workarounds.
When I was talking about good looking, I was talking about Glenn.
Yeah.
Well,
we were talking about Glenn and you left him out. Yeah. So weird.
That's a given.
No, I'm just kidding.
Boy band right here. Boy band.
Exactly. But when you, but here's my question. What do you do on the days when you feel like, oh man, I'm just tired. I don't want to be the social justice warrior today. I just want to crack some jokes. Or I just want to chill out or.
I do it.
We curate the gifts.
Yeah, we sit and curate gifts all damn day. That's for sure. But I do it, and I think that's important. I think, Eric, that's really important, is to not be just one thing. And the more that I can be human, and I can clown and crack a joke and send a funny picture and be eating some crazy food and also be hitting you with a message and then a stupid video, I'm a human being, just like the rest of anybody else that's listening or watching. I think that also adds some authenticity and validity to the experience, is that I'm not just here to do blank. None of us are just blank. I think, you know, that's part of a lot of the projects that we work on, is to try to hold the mirror up to the complexity that we all share. And if we can find those commonalities, we're more inclined to invest a little bit of time and attention to seeing through other people's eyes, even briefly.
Yeah. And, you know, you three are artists, and you know, from hanging out with Glenn and Jesse and knowing what I know about Aaron, you guys are very passionate about language. And there are a lot of sort of language purists out there who, maybe snobbly or not, kind of critique emojis and GIFs.
That's a good one. Glenn, we were talking about this recently. You want to start on that?
Yeah, I do a lot of work on languages, and it's interesting, without getting too heavy on it. You know, the evolution of language and vernacular and dialects in and of itself is incredibly political. And, you know, when they could call received pronunciation, is what we know as British, comes to the colonized America, becomes what we're speaking right now, which is called General American, over 350 years. That sort of culture impacting each other. And hybridized languages appear, like Creole, when you know, colonized people sort of, you know, impact and influence language. And, you know, for us, it's very interesting, the politics and opportunity of voice is super interesting. And so you know, Ebroji purists, I don't know if they've ever heard a different language or a different accent, you know, emoji purists, because, you know, to us, emojis are a interesting and amazing way that language evolves in a technology space. You know, sort of this, you know, emojis are like the first non-verbal accent. You know, it's like something where a language gets translated into text. Like, what is the version of like a Southern dialect in text? You know, it's emojis, and how people use emojis are really, like, you know, people hacking emojis together. And we talked about this in the beginning of Ebroji, even, which is people, if they didn't have the right emoji, they would put two emojis together to mean something else. And, you know, these are all complex ways. I mean, they're incredibly simple and fun, but the underlying premise of it is people's creativity and learning how to express themselves in interesting new ways. And so, you know, I think that we talk about emojis being sort of like an accent or a dialect of technology in the typing space, you know, whereas in a Southern dialect, someone might say soda, someone might say pop, you know, and these are things that are accepted in oral communication. And what does that mean in like sort of typewritten communication? And sort of, you know, our belief is that emojis is an evolution as opposed to a regression of that technology in language. So it's an exciting space to be in.
It seems also like there it is part of a circular, right, a continuum of language. We had hieroglyphs, right? We used to speak in pictographs and communicate in images and combining them to mean something larger than some languages. One word represents what it would take 17 words to say in English. So, you know, there is separately as a former teacher, you know, I do acknowledge that there is a bit of a dumbing down in language and a less of a value put into being able to spell correctly or write in full sentences, even write at all with your hands, because now everything is texted. Many people don't teach cursive anymore. Speaking in acronyms, all those things I think are happening. There are valid criticisms of them. This I see on the other side. I see it slightly differently, kind of on a parallel track, something that is GIFs being alive and injecting that kind of tone and texture into what you were already saying anyway, right? We're not a separate game that we're asking people to play. You're already texting. You're already touching your phone for 115 minutes a day. You're already communicating with your mother, your friend, your ex-boyfriend, whatever. You're already trying to say something to them. And we're giving you an expanded toolbox to be able to communicate that. That also is really addictive, really fun. But it's helping to articulate your vision. It's not imposed upon you. You go and you search and you find that voice. But all this stuff is constantly, evolving. Evolving kind of implies getting better, but it is changing. And I think those conversations are good to have. We're happy to have them.
We called it a living language.
A living language.
Yes.
Abroji launched, is doing tremendously well. What are your goals, you know, with Abroji? What are your ambitions, you know, even beyond Abroji as a team?
That's something we're figuring out, because one of the nice things, to be perfectly honest, is that, you know, we built this ourselves. We don't have investors. We don't know anybody, any kind of money or timeline or need to monetize it in any particular way. We're kind of trying to learn. We're figuring out the space as we go and figuring out how this channel, this utility that we're creating for people to communicate, how we can better serve our users, what other tools we can add to that toolbox to serve them. So, you know, I don't think we have a finite answer for that. I mean, Glenn, you had some interesting ideas yesterday when we were talking about, you know, the channel, but.
Yeah, I think that what we're starting with just a very simple idea and try to do that well. I see a lot of questions on the comment thread. We are working on the Android version. So for everyone who asks about Android, we are working on it. But yeah, I think that the great part about what we're seeing is that people are responding really well to the notion of being able to communicate to our curating and correlating voice and interjecting in that space. And I think that the opportunities for us, as to participate in that messaging system that Jesse described, the, you know, hundreds of minutes that people spend a day communicating, for us to play a part of that is an important thing, and likely will play a big role in whatever we decide to do in the future.
And Glenn, talk a little bit more about what you're up to and your ambitions, because I know, you know, artistically you're doing some fascinating things. I know you're also working with other people as well on the app side. Tell us a little bit more about.
Yeah, so my studio has long had a division where we create media projects with different people. So to that extent, we've worked with Jimmy Iovine in the past. We did some stuff with Universal, worked with Oprah Winfrey, Simon Fuller. We've chosen our projects based on really understanding and wanting to be in the dialogue about voice and opportunity for, you know, using technology for positive change in very meaningful ways. I was the chief creative officer of Napster 2.0 for a bit, really trying to figure out and understand access, both from a, you know, artist perspective and a civil rights perspective, and really interject what we could, a fundamental knowledge of technology, but not really having it being about technology. You know, I think that, you know, for us, it was about using a mature and sort of wise way, or trying to, at least, and to assert ideas through the technology space. And so that's sort of the ambition that I have for the studio, and why when we started talking about Ebroji, it made perfect sense for us to start, just digging in and start building things really fast, because it's definitely a place that's important to us and that we want to go.
Cool. I want to ask a series of broader questions. These could be, all three of you can answer individually, or if you could opt in or opt out, whatever you're feeling. Mm-hmm. So first, what is the best advice?
For me, my dad was a heavy advice guy. I think, one of the ones that always stuck with me is, and one of the things that stuck with me is very young, he always, I found himself telling me, if you don't know, find out. Very basic, but anything I was wondering about, or you find, he really, in terms of trying to push independence onto me and not relying on other people for information or counting on other folks to do what they said they were going to do, go find out for yourself so you have that information, so that at the end of the day you know that you've done your best. He's hit me with several cliches. What about you guys?
Well, because everything is constantly evolving and changing, one thing that I was told, which I think many people have heard, is that in order, to become comfortable, you usually have to start out uncomfortable. Mm. And so try and put yourself in as many uncomfortable positions as you possibly can, so that then, you'll hopefully become more comfortable and as wide a net of situations as you could get your hands on and put yourself into. So, just exposure and trial and error and getting in there and figuring it out and never stop pushing.
Yeah, I think mine are, I'll jump on that thread and say that I've gotten a lot of crazy good advice from a lot of different mentors over my life. But the ones I think that are most appropriate for us here is to make a lot of mistakes as fast as you can. There's an old proverb, which is those who make no mistakes make nothing. For us, it was like get the mistakes out of the way or make as many as you can as fast as you can, because then you'll be on your road to being productive, and don't be afraid of making mistakes. So
Next question: what's something you guys used to fervently believe that you now see as fundamentally misguided?
You know what, for me, honestly, it was I for a long time coasted. I think I thought that if I kind of thought that coming out ahead was the same, provided the same feeling as earnership, as earning something, right? Just kind of like getting by on, I was a good student, I was a good athlete, and that's not the, that doesn't feel that, speaking of like kind of good advice, also one thing my father would always say is that talent is no match for work ethic and wit. Like, it's not just getting by on talent. Is not the same feeling as really plowing the field and earning something. And that's something that I had kind of a rude awakening with when I left college, when I had to get out in that so-called real world, that like, sorry, dude, you can't coast. Everybody's talented. There's a lot of people that are smart, that are hustling, that mastered these skills way before you even knew they existed. And as a competitive person, that made me have to kind of shift gears. That was a bit of a wake up call that I wish I had known earlier.
To jump in and just to again further that a bit, I guess in the space of like working and creating media, I guess one thing I think that I've grown with over time is to understand that quantity of work is not necessarily equivalent to the quality of work. I think that when we were younger as artists and developers, we'd spend all night, and not that we don't still, but almost sort of with this badge of, we spent the time and, this, that, and the other. And I think that what I've learned, is that focus, a real dedication to executing complex ideas, but very simply, I think are extremely valuable, more so than, one's ability to over-engineer things or overthink things. Sometimes, I've had a tendency in the past, like sort of, expand and try to do bigger things first. And I think that, I don't know if I think that's the best idea, but I think that, certainly now, it's about focus and about quality. So.
And you don't have to try and do it all by yourself. It's okay to ask for help. Yeah. And then that way, when you win, you get to celebrate in the group. And it's awesome.
I'm still learning that one.
In what way? You what?
That I like to work. I like to be alone. I like to kind of like grind. I think I find a lot of, in so many ways, I find my happiness in the process in working, but I have had to learn, and had to be taught, frankly, reminded, frankly, you don't have to do it alone, but also the value isn't, there's nothing cool about being busy. I think particularly we live in LA now where everybody kind of wants to give off the air of being busy. It adds value to, you know, who you are. But what's most important is the end result. Like, what are you doing? And what are you completing? And not to show it off, but if you're actually trying to move, you know, matriculate the ball down the field, what are you actually doing and learning in the process? Not what's the cool story you can tell at a party about how busy you are.
Why are you doing it? Right.
Yeah, and why? Exactly. For what purpose is it going to matter a week after it's completed?
Yeah. Being cool, being busy isn't cool. Or you're not just cool because you're busy. On that note, when you think of the term success, who's somebody that comes to mind for you?
For me, that always boils down. That boils down to happiness. You know, like people who are. It really doesn't have to do, you know, you think of a lot of success stories that has to do with wealth and or fame, but really it is, you know, happiness. What are people who have found a way to truly be happy and comfortable, like really, you know, we all know what it's like to be, if we don't have it ourselves, around other people who are truly settled and comfortable in their own skin and confident and don't have to agree and be amenable to everything. They know exactly who they are and what they enjoy and what they don't. So that's important. But also, I think for me, if I'm able to find joy through my art and also sustain healthy relationships and maybe provide for my family and broaden my networks to the extent that they nourish me in some way. I mean that's a success. That's what comes to mind now, at least. That's success for me.
Well, I mean, I to that I would just add, you know, being able to really function from your position of strength, which is when you are allowed to live in a space and be comfortable as yourself and have the room to maneuver to figure out who and what that is and how you want to share that with everyone else. And when you get to the place where you realize that that is that special thing that you have to bring because only you have your point of view. And if you can get to that place where you're truly comfortable and then capitalize on what that is that you can bring forward to everyone else, then you are very lucky that you're able to function in that way. And I find that that's a very successful way to live because you're not doing it where it's contingent on what everyone else thinks you should be doing. It's what it is that you think that you should be doing. And then, you know, when you can find and get into that happy space, then that's successful because you know, should hopefully feel pretty fulfilled in that you can take all of the guards and the filters down and you can just kind of be and do what you want and move around and enjoy, you know, what it is that you have to bring and enjoy what else is happening around you and see other people for what they have to bring and all of the good that's there.
I love that. Thanks for sharing. I know you guys think a lot about social justice as well. What do you think are the is a big misconception people have when they talk about social justice, whether from a theory or from a practice?
You know what? I think not thinking about it is problematic, but I think that there is what I find. You find this in real life, and I always have because I've been in the space as long as I can remember. But online, you know, in that Twitter feed and that message board and that kind of vitriolic space, it's heightened. Certainly, it's gotten a platform that it didn't have before, which I think makes it look larger and more influential than it really is. But I think that I find a response to, you know, privilege is really the ability to like disbelieve or not value something just because it's not your experience, right? And wipe it to the side just because, oh, I didn't experience that, so it's inherently invalid. And I think that the response is for people to make other people's issues, other people who are saying, look, I would really love some equity, some access to these services, or like to, you know, not be killed at this rate, or not be judged for the same behavior completely more harshly. For people receiving that information, that plea, really, which is what it is, social justice is really a community. People who are looking for social change is really a community just trying to make it back into the black, like just back to make it even, right? They are the hurt, trying to breathe, trying to get a little bit of that air that you're breathing. And I think that a lot of people respond selfishly by making it about themselves instead of just being present. And right now, Eric, I'm looking at you, listening to your question and trying to answer your question, and not bringing in some anecdote about some guy that I met. It's almost, I think people respond to pleas for social justice much in the way that politicians kind of stump, which is, whatever you're saying, I'm just going to say, well, I met a lady in Wilmington, Delaware, and she told me a great story. She's married with two kids and blah, 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 blah. That's, A, it's, you made it up. Two, one, it's a singular story. It doesn't speak to the body politic. It doesn't speak to the issue at large. So it's a very easy to kind of twist and turn your way out of just listen and just be present and just accept the possibility that an experience outside of your own might have some validity.
I think that the misconception is that somebody actually owns issues. Everybody owns the issue. I think that what we're talking about is empathy and creating a circumstance where just in the fact that people in media or the way that social justice is interpreted as someone else owning the issue, just assigning an issue to a group of people in and of itself makes it an other. It makes it an other person's issue. Yeah, I think that, for me, it's about, the misconception is that it's all of our issue and we all own it, because there's two sides to empathy. There's a problem and there's, a thoughtful response that's inclusive, and it's about inclusion in that way. So,
yeah, and representation doesn't take from the other, right? Eric getting a voice doesn't take away my voice. There's not one finite pie that if we ask to be treated a certain way or to be able to have access, for gay marriage, doesn't affect other marriage. It's not a threat to other marriage. That's a childish and preposterous. So that goes for representation. Whoever's represented in the whoever the faces and the humans that populate the experience of Ubroji, doesn't, if there's more people of color, that doesn't make anybody else feel like it's less than. I think, what it reminds me of is, we were talking about Hollywood earlier, Eric, and kind of the difference between my experience as an actor and my experience in kind of the real world, is that in Hollywood, there's always been this story that you've got to make most things and most characters white because the population won't receive it otherwise. You've got to have a white lead because that's the way we make money and that's the way people will pay attention to that. And I just so happen to be on one of the most popular TV shows in television history that's always been incredibly diverse and always been a success. So Grey's Anatomy proved over a decade ago that that's complete bullshit. Complete bullshit. That people absolutely watch things that connect to them and they are able to empathize with Sandra Oh's character and Jim Pickens' character and people of all different, and Sara Ramirez. They can relate, straight people can relate to a bisexual character. They can, and just like when you're raising children, you have to set the bar and allow them to jump over that hurdle. Like, we don't have to coddle each other and pretend that we can only, chew gum. We can't chew gum and walk at the same time. Like, we can do both. We have faith in each other and we push each other. And that's what art and activism does, right? It challenges you to do things you would not otherwise have believed that we could possibly do. Women did not have the right to vote. Somebody had to demand that they were worthy of the right to vote. Mm-hmm. And all women. Right, so that you have to be willing to push, and I'm not equating us to some massive movement, but the principle still remains, is that those things have to be, somebody's got to sound the horn, and they might fail and it might not pick up steam again for another 50 years, but the principle kind of it goes far and wide, I think.
Yeah, and I at the dinner that we were at, one of the topics was sort of social justice and celebrity. And there were a few threads that that came out from that. But one question that was posed was, what would, if Martin Luther King were alive today, what would that be like? And one of the comments, I think maybe it was, I don't know who it was, if it was you, was said, like, he would have been harassed by online trolls.
Yeah. Somebody posited that the world would be somehow a much better place if Martin Luther King had the tool of Twitter. I think the person was well-meaning, but unreasonably kind of...
Can we answer that in facial expression?
I'm giving you a lot of facial expression gifts here. Look, and this is something that we talk about every Martin Luther King Day, is this Martin Luther King has become this sterilized trinket of himself. Martin Luther King was about poor people's rights, workers' rights, labor, about, you know, revolutionary change in our economic system and representation around this country, and pushing the needle forward for those in need. You know, you have this kind of a biblical Jesus-like figure that is actually of the people, that would absolutely be told all the hang-ups that we get online, all the people that call me horrible names and give me death threats and say that I'm making it about race when a 12-year-old boy is shot in 2 seconds in a drive-by shooting, essentially, from a police officer who didn't belong there, Tamir Rice, that would be, you'd say the same, you'd do the same thing, you know, Fox News would exist, you'd have the same threads of, you know, the currency of dishonesty, right, and that the value of truth and having what you say actually mean something has been kind of really, really corrupted. So, yes, I think that it's very easy when people are already dead and gone to pick their greatest hits and their greatest black and white photos and to deify them in a way that is comfortable for you. Again, we talked about it before. It's when I'm listening to you, making it about me. So people who are listening to MLK, the half a speech they've ever heard, and making it about how them, what you said the other day, you know, you should be uncomfortable. You know, social justice and moving things forward should have you experiencing discomfort. If you're comfortable, then nothing is changing. And so much of what folks experience is, particularly on being political on the far right, it's really about not changing. Do whatever you got to do, but don't make me have to change. Because if I have to change, that is inherently a critique on how I've been living or whose neck has been under my boot for the last however period of time. So we like to get up and move. And move things. And I've talked before about, you know, my evolution as a kid. When you're younger, you say stupid things, and you get older and you get educated and you experience spending time with people and you learn. But being open to that is a big part of it, I think.
It's interesting. I'm curious, as someone who gets both, you know, extreme, adoration and love and sort of like, it's fun, like fans and hero worship to some degree, of celebrity worship. But also on the other side of extreme, like, you know, people, you mentioned death threats, you mentioned all sorts of horrible things. Every time I see an online troll, you know, I just want to give them a hug. But it's so minimal in my life. But as someone who, you know, sees this a lot, how do you make sense of it? Like, does it make you cynical? Does it make you, like, I don't know, not want to talk to people? Like,
I think that, and this is something that the three of us have talked a lot about, is we've all, as three in particular, in our personal lives and our upbringing, have had the privilege of growing up in really diverse communities and atmospheres and lifestyles and schools with a range of incomes and experiences and levels of relations to, you know, relationship with and under various power structures. So I say that only that it's not new online, right? I know those people that are trolling me. None of them ever have their face, you know, on it. They have some generic American nationalistic banner as their avatar, and they're slinging some reactionary, you know, very rudimentary level thinking that they're parroting off of some of Newsmax or something. So it's not startling to me, because I'm used to it. I know those people. I'm in school with those people, and I live across the street with those people. And that guy's dad called me the N-word. And I know them, so it's not new. But it is sad that people, with all the information that we have now and all the access to information you have, the question you just asked me or the lie that you just perpetuated on my page is a Google away. the answer, the truth is a Google away. So it's sad. I think that's probably what you're intimating with the hug too. It's like, buddy, like, spend your time in a different way. Like, why'd you go all the way out of your way to come find me for me to ignore you? Like, you're not new. It's not new or surprising or even interesting. It's actually rather boring. But it doesn't dissuade me. It doesn't impact the work that we do. It actually emboldens it. You know, again, if it's making you uncomfortable, maybe there's a reason behind it. Maybe that has a lot to do with you. But I think
maybe that
means we're doing something right.
Right.
Sure as hell, I don't care. But I do think that experience, it's something we find, you know, Glenn and Aaron and I are constantly kind of reminded of, is that being able to speak multiple languages, which a lot of disenfranchised cultures have to do, we call it code switching, and being able to know how to walk in work in a so-called white world or a corporate structure or different social circles in high school, which can be very tough for kids, right? We're familiar with a couple different languages, a couple different behavior kind of sets, and I think that helps us create a better product and enjoy creating that product because it comes from an authentic place that we really know and understand. But in terms of I think it's a badge of honor, to be honest.
What's upcoming for you guys in 2016?
So we got a bunch of stuff coming up. We got a whole lot of ideas in the works for Ebroji, and we're gonna filter them down and then get this part to work and take another few big steps.
Yeah, we're constantly grinding, and you know, and again, it's because we're learning on our feet. We're perfectly transparent about that, right? Like we're learning as we go. We're listening to our users, and we're trying to evolve and form and shape this. We'll be building, you know, that Android app's coming soon, and we'll constantly be kind of emboldening and making a more robust product that people love. And we're so glad that people are responsive, and we really appreciate all of you guys, not just downloading it, but really using it and telling us what you think about it and constructive criticism and how much you love it and sending us those screenshots of your threads. Everybody's thread is turning into all GIFs on text. And as long as that's fun and enjoyable and you're communicating, then we're happy. So thanks.
Yeah. And I'll close with, you know, a lot of the, a lot of entrepreneurs and product people who will be hearing this when it releases the podcast too. One, do you have an ask of them in terms of, in the context of social justice or just in general? And two, how can they help, what you're working on? And perhaps maybe it's just, feedback on Ebroji and using it as a user. And then three, and lastly, where can people, find you guys online so they can, learn more about Ebroji and what you're up to and stay tuned?
In terms of what they can do in like a social justice space, I think we've actually tapped on. I think you framed a lot of these questions really well that kind of hand them some of our thoughts on that. But I think that I never ask anybody to think like me, but I do always kind of emphasize, and it was always emphasized to me coming up, is that look online for other perspectives, for perspectives other than your own and outside of your circle. You cannot only get news information from your Facebook friends or your Twitter followers. Experiment and broaden those horizons. Read Ta-Nehisi Coates, anything he writes. And then go follow those links and go dig deeper and decide if you agree or you think it's, totally useless. I doubt the latter will be true, but I think that just be curious, right? I think that curiosity never killed anyone. And ignorance is not nearly, ignorance can be taught away. But if you're not curious, if you're not actually interested in experiences other than your own, and the possibility that, that people's experiences are valid and true and they are allowed to feel, then you're missing out. You're really missing out on an expanded, the one thing I'll say about Ebroji that we notice is that people, one of the biggest responses has been gratitude from people who feel like, oh, it's me, I'm represented in some way. And that makes a world of difference to people. People only pursue in their life attainable goals. I didn't want to be an astronaut when I was a kid because I didn't know anybody that knew anybody that looked like me that was an astronaut. That's not a real goal for me. And that's reasonable. That's a rational way to think and behave, right? So, you know, people that are looking for that, allow them to look for that. Because most of the time when people are asking to be heard and asking to live a more productive life, it's coming from a place of kind of stifling.
Well, allow yourself to hear it from a different point of view, and you might find that you learn something new, and you might find that that's a way you never knew you could look at that exact same thing you've been looking at forever. And when you allow, you know, that's what's so interesting about language and about being versed in multiple languages, is that you can look and say the exact same thing in so many different ways. And when you do that, it allows you to expand the way you think and expand the way you see and experience what it is that's happening, which, you know, allows you to be able to connect to more people, because you can really, you know, you can see the benefit that you get from hearing it from their point of view. And so it just allows you to live a more full experience because you get to see it from so many different angles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, language is culture, embrace.
For the entrepreneurs too, I think I have a friend named James Tony who runs an agency, and he has a mantra that he says, which is, the right thing can also be the profitable thing. And I think a lot of times entrepreneurs get into business to try to make money, which is great. That all is cool and it makes sense. But if you do a little bit of extra work and also make it a good thing for the world, I think that's not a bad thing too. And so I really latch on to his, it's the right thing can also be the profitable thing model, because, you know, we all have a lot of work that we can do to that will also service ourselves, but also service our greater purpose. So
I think it's a great way to close, guys. Thank you for chatting with us.
Hey, Eric, thank you, man. Thank you so
much
to the whole Product Hunt team. You guys have been tremendous and really helpful in this process. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Forward to more launches of Abroji. So everyone, definitely.
All right.
Abroji. A lot of love to Jesse and Glenn and Aaron, and thank you guys for coming on. I'll talk to you soon.